from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's only appropriate that as the proprietor of the copyrighted feature Apologies of the Week, I begin this broadcast. My first back live in the Show Dome in so very long, and it hasn't changed a bit. It looks great. Begin this broadcast, I say, with an apology, but a sincere one, unlike many that you hear during the Apology of the Week segment of this very broadcast, because many of you around the country last week did not hear the last minute of this program. And don't blame your local station. They're doing a great job. Give money. Don't blame the network this once. Blame me. In my that broadcast was produced by me. It was recorded last April and produced just as I was trying to get my hiney out of this country and down to Australia. And in that rush, I mistook the number 59 for the number 58. It's a natural mistake. Nines look like eights all the time, don't they? Say yes, please. So that's what happened. I just produced a program that was a minute long. So a lot of you listened to the whole show, not coming in at the beginning, and never knew who that guy was I was interviewing. So it was Alan Toussaint. So my apologies, ladies and gentlemen. And if you want to hear the whole show with the missing minute that you missed, if you're around the country, it's available for you in its overlong entirety at harryshearer.com. But my sincere apologies. I was, as I say, rushing down to Australia from whence I am now back, hence me being here in the Le Show Dome. It's a whence and hence kind of show, I'm gathering, just listening to myself. And just before I left, as a matter of fact, 2 weeks ago today, as the Crow times it, Australian Prime Minister John Howard called a national election. They have a parliamentary system, so the election is called by the Prime Minister. And the election will be held October 9th, resulting in what the news media called a marathon campaign lasting all of 6 weeks. Think of it. This is the longest national, in effect, presidential, although he's not the president, campaign in Australia in 20 years. 6 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, they have to endure. We are in what, the 400th month of ours? It's a marathon. And a couple other differences I noticed about the Australian election system. One, voting is mandatory. So they don't have to worry about turnout. And I don't know if it's involved with the jury system, the jury pool system or not, because that's what almost keeps me from voting now, having been called for jury duty this year. And balloting is done with, yes, good old-fashioned paper and pencil. So how are they supposed to rig an election then? I don't understand. This very day, Australian time, they've already had their one and only debate between the two main candidates for the prime ministership, prime ministerhood, prime ministeriate. Whatever you call it. And just to prove that they're not totally bereft of modern inconveniences, the debate was held in front of an audience of what are called in Australia swinging voters. So I guess while the candidates speak, there's wife swapping going on. Anyway, the swinging voters are monitored, just like here, throughout the debate, and a little electronic device is superimposed at the bottom of the screen to show how the opinion is vibrating during the debate. It's called a worm. I don't make these up. So the verdict of the worm is that the opponent, the challenger, Mark Latham of the Labor Party, was the audience's choice. He went on the attack against Prime Minister Howard on the subject of Iraq. Imagine that. Imagine a campaign where they do that. And the newspapers, after the debate, quoted a spokesperson for the challenger candidate who successfully seduced the audience, according to The Worm, as saying that he came across knowledgeable, competent, and blokey. Blokey, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we need. We need more blokey. Hello, welcome to the show.
Is frozen in a smile, and the road goes on forever. wine over tabletop, eyes wide with wine and wonder, or lazy counting kangaroos in dingle days down under. Down under, down under, in dingle days down under. Over the next hill, there's no more rain or thunder. You chose the open road, and you were willing to sing and dance and take the tambourine and the shilling. All the secret tricks and footsteps you were learning. But once the stone begins to roll, it's not turning. Like a rolling stone. Road, and you were willing to sing and dance and take the tambourine and the shilling. All the secret tricks and footsteps you were learning. But once the stone begins to roll, it's not turning. Like a rolling stone. Strutting on some dusty stage when wondering where the time goes. The time goes, the time goes, wondering where the time goes. Over the next hill, they say there will be rainbows. Oh, rainbows, rainbows, somewhere over.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you back. No, I'm the way. It's like when they go to commercial and they welcome you back. You didn't go anywhere. They did. I never understood that. Welcome back. I've been sitting on the couch the whole time. So I'm welcoming you to this edition of the show, though you've probably been sitting there listening to it for minutes now. I know. It's this goofy broadcast stuff we do. Ladies and gentlemen, speaking of goofy broadcast stuff, as you probably know full well, there is a blazing controversy. The subject of the president's... Is George Bush still president? Yes, he is. Interesting. President's National Guard service has returned to prominence, partly through the perspicacity of the Associated Press, which filed a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit to spring out some documents about the president's National Guard history that had not yet been released, even though several times during the spring, the Pentagon and the White House said, we've released everything. But we didn't mean everything the way you mean everything. You mean everything, everything. So that happened. And the same lacunae, thank you, that have been long noted in the service record have been highlighted again. Namely, why didn't the young George W. Bush take that flight physical in 1972, and then what did he do in Alabama? And there the rumors start flying. You know, there are many reasons why you wouldn't want to take a flight physical after the government has spent $1 million training you to fly a plane and you've pledged to serve for 6 years. The reasons are, how long is your arm? Anyway, then, of course, on Wednesday, CBS 60 Minutes 2 ran with this story about new documents unearthed, supposedly. They didn't say they were new. They said they were old. But there is the nub of the controversy now. Were these documents from a commanding officer of Bush's real or not? And I, unlike so many people in the media, I am not a document expert. So I'm sitting here waiting. But, and of course, the story has gotten huge legs, partly because of the interesting fact that 60 Minutes 2 ran the story Wednesday night. Within minutes, bloggers were beginning to consult their own document experts. Yeah, bloggers have document experts now. And start poking holes in the alleged authenticity of these documents, which gives rise to the question, how did the bloggers know? How could they react that fast? So there are conspiracy theories, although my favorite theory is conservative mole inside CBS News tipped them off. Anyway, as I say, the story is going around. It's got great legs, even more than the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth ads did, partly because it's CBS. It's Dan Rather. They've put themselves behind this, and when the questions began, they reaffirmed their faith in the documents and the story. So it's now, man, is that a great target. But here's the part of the story that nobody has covered, and I don't have tape of this because I didn't know it was going to happen. I don't have a conservative mole inside CBS News or a liberal mole. I have no moles today. There were reports that during the day, Friday, Dan Rather was going kind of ballistic about this whole thing. Now, there's no evidence of that, except for this. The pre-recorded segments of the CBS Evening News Friday, he sounded normal. You know, the ones where he recorded narration earlier in the day, like the story about the documents. He recorded that narration earlier in the day. It's recorded. You see what I'm saying? It's recorded earlier in the day. But when he comes to the anchor desk to actually anchor the news live, his voice is like half an octave lower. He's got a sore throat, like you'd get from yelling or other reasons. Or going out in a warm summer draft, perhaps. Other stories, ladies and gentlemen, undercovered. Sunday morning, Colin Powell made the rounds of most of the Sunday Yak shows, so there were at least three opportunities to ask him about these two stories. And no one did. He was asked plenty about reports that North Korea is moving apace in a nuclear direction, which is scary enough, and he had a comment ready for that. But here's what he wasn't asked about from the Washington Post. So it wasn't like it was invisible to the people questioning Colin Powell. Emerging details of clandestine nuclear work in South Korea. South Korea indicate that the U.S. ally was more successful than Iran in producing the key ingredient for a bomb and used deception to conceal the illegal activity from U.N. inspectors for years. These are the good guys. In interviews late last week, diplomats with knowledge of both covert programs disclosed that South Korean scientists, enriched uranium to levels four times higher than did their counterparts in Iran. Seoul conducted those experiments in violation of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty 2 years before Iran did, and kept them secret for nearly 2 years after Iran's came to light, said the diplomats, who would discuss the investigation only on condition of anonymity. I.e., IAEA inspectors have yet to uncover the full scope of the activities of either Iran or South Korea. Yeah, but Iran is part of the axis of evil, and South Korea is part of the... Until 2 weeks ago, there were no public indications that South Korea had conducted any weapons-related work. The South Korean revelations have thrown the Bush administration's efforts on Iran and North Korea into turmoil. U.S. officials said they were forced to scale back plans to refer the Iran issue to the U.N. Security Council. U.S. officials had hoped to push the Iran agenda at the IAEA's board meeting beginning in Vienna this week, but there is little support inside the Security Council for muscling Iran. Those Europeans. Is that new Europe or old Europe? Or all Europe? Or only Europe? Europeans said a final draft of the resolution is being worked out. U.S. officials say it's too early to know whether the South Korean issue should be referred to the council, but they are working hard to avoid the appearance of being softer on friends than on foes. All right, here's, ladies and gentlemen, here's a quote to store in your memory banks for future reference, because you know you'll want to come back to it. Quote, quoting John Bolton, a neocon who's now Undersecretary of State for Arms Control. Quote, one thing I can assure is that we will not allow a double standard in terms of how we treat the violations, unquote. Okay? Aside from the fact that we don't know who he's assuring, one thing I can assure is that, so he may not be assuring us. That may be his out. The IAEA has suspected South Korea violating the Non-Proliferation Treaty for 6 years. It confronted the Seoul government last December. Several months later, South Korea began to acknowledge the work. Publicly, officials in Seoul said the experiments were one-time efforts by scientists working on their own. Those rogue scientists, like that rogue in Pakistan who was proliferating, selling nuke stuff to Libya and North Korea. These guys working on their own. Why can't government control these people? Diplomats challenged those assertions and revealed over the weekend the Seoul government officially and repeatedly blocked IAEA inspections months after the experiments and told the organization false cover stories. During an inspection last week, South Korean officials could not produce documentation or several scientists who were involved in the work. Doesn't that sound like Saddam? Couldn't produce the documents or the scientists. Let's not have a double standard, John Bolton. U.S. officials have repeatedly praised South Korea for coming clean voluntarily and cooperating with the IAEA. So nobody asked Colin Powell about that. And nobody asked Colin Powell about this. A new book by BBC newscaster James Naughtie, in which it is asserted that U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell described neoconservatives in the Bush administration as, quote, and I'm cleaning this up for the F-word CC, effing crazies during the buildup to war in Iraq. His extraordinary outburst is alleged to have taken place during a telephone conversation with British Foreign Secretary Jack Straw, trying in the summer of 2002 to build an international coalition for UN intervention. The crazies were said to be Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Wolfowitz. Last week, Powell's office contacted the U.S. publishers of the book to say they would vigorously deny the claims if publication went ahead. No legal action was threatened, so the U.S. launch of the book, The Accidental American, Tony Blair, and the presidency will proceed as planned. Naughtie stands by his claims. The phrase, effing crazies, will be quoted on the jacket of the book. Look forward to that. Don't take your kids in the bookstore. So nobody asked Colin Powell if that was true or not on this on the Sunday Morning Yak shows. I'm sure he would have had an interesting answer. But, you know, he was only on three Yak shows. So how could we expect anybody to ask? Ladies and gentlemen, changing the subject with whiplash inducing speed. This is your brain on brain. What? A cannabis, that is to say a marijuana-like substance produced by the brain, may dampen delusional or psychotic experiences rather than trigger them. Eh? Heavy marijuana use has been linked to psychosis in the past, leading researchers to look for a connection between the brain's natural cannabinoid system and schizophrenia. When Marcus Lewicki of the University of Cologne, Germany, and Andrea Giuffrida and Danielle Piomelli of the University of California, Irvine, looked at levels of natural marijuana-like substance anandamide. Thank you. I'll rehearse these in full view of the audience. Anandamide. They were higher in people with schizophrenia than in normal healthy controls. The team measured levels of anandamide in the cerebral spinal fluid of 47 people suffering their first bout of schizophrenia. Their levels were 6 times as high as people with symptoms of psychosis, 8 times as high. What? Oh, had not. 26 people had symptoms of psychosis. Compared with 84 healthy volunteers, levels were 6 times as high with people with symptoms of psychosis, 8 times as high in those with schizophrenia. This is a massive increase in anandamide levels, Luik told the National Cannabis and Mental Illness Conference in Melbourne, Australia last week. Hey! I missed that. Why didn't somebody tell me that was going on? Betcha there were some good papers, and that is just in levels could be 100 times higher in the synapses where nerve signaling is taking place, the scientist says. So, you figure it out, ladies and gentlemen. You figure it out. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, this will be the last Melbourne, Australia reference in this week's show. But just to keep you up to date on broadcast technology, a top-rated station in Melbourne, radio station, Fox FM, I believe it's no relation. I believe they pay their employees on time. Fox FM has admitted it uses new technology to speed up songs on its playlist. Fox General Manager Gary Pert said the station played some songs faster to create, quote, an up vibe, high energy feel about the station, unquote. He denied the process allowed the station to squeeze in more commercials. He said most listeners would not know when a song was played faster. Quote, we've never had a single complaint from an artist, listener, or record company. Record company executives contacted this week by an Australian newspaper say they were reluctant to complain because they were afraid they wouldn't get their records played, but they were shocked by Fox's admission. Said an executive for a major label, quote, I think a lot of artists will go through the roof when they hear their songs have been speeded up by Fox. Yes, you heard right. An executive for a major record label empathizing with artists. Quote, we cannot complain out loud because we need the station's support. Members of the U.S. rock group Live in Melbourne recently said they were shocked and outraged when they heard one of their songs, Speed It Up, on Fox. This is your song on Fox.
Pretty little brown girl.
Sweet old day.
This is Le Show, and in case you missed it, the Coalition of the Willing has lost a member. Ouch, that sounds painful. Costa Rica asked the United States to remove it from a list of Iraqi coalition partners this week after the Costa Rican Constitutional Court ruled that inclusion on the list violated the Costa Rican Constitution. Oh, that! Which banned support for any military action not authorized by the United Nations. I guess they need a permission slip. Without any public explanation, President George Bush last week increased the estimate of al-Qaeda leaders who've been killed or captured after receiving a revised U.S. intelligence analysis delivered the day before his acceptance speech at the Republican convention. The change is because they used to measure known leaders. Now they're measuring key members and associates. Associates. Those mean salespeople? Clerks? Dateline Islamabad. Pakistan dismissed a claim by a U.S. counterterrorism official that the United States and its allies were closing in on Osama bin Laden. Pakistani media quoted Kofor Black, the State Department coordinator for counterterrorism, saying the U.S. and its allies have put him, i.e., Osama, on the defensive, increasing chances of his capture soon. like all conspiracy theorists theorize. But Pakistan Information Minister Sheikh Rashid Ahmed said Black's remarks were, quote, a political statement. We don't have any information about that. Black said, if bin Laden has a watch, he should be looking at it because the clock is ticking. He will be caught. If he has a watch, the clock is ticking. News of the Chalabi family, ladies and gentlemen. Salim Chalabi, the man who until recently was in charge of organizing Saddam Hussein's trial, was in court himself this week, facing two-month-old allegations he's involved in the murder of the director general of Iraq's finance ministry. In the spirit of the new Iraq, reporters were barred from viewing Chalabi's appearance. That's the way. Attaway, boys. An hour after he met with the judge, he was released on bond. After authorities concluded he did not pull the trigger in the death, he's still under investigation for being the paymaster for the crime. Salim returned to the country Thursday after he was removed from his position organizing Saddam's trial. He was dismissed from the tribunal because he had disrespected the court system, according to government officials, by not turning himself in. They would not have removed him from heading Saddam's tribunal, they say, simply for being a suspect in a murder case. Bar set pretty low, I guess. His uncle? I can never remember these relations. Yes, his uncle, Ahmed Chalabi, the big Mr. Chalabi, also returned to Iraq to face charges of dealing in counterfeit Iraqi currency. It's unclear what the result of that is. Meanwhile, General Sir Mike Jackson, don't know jokes, the British Army's most senior officer, has been flown to Iraq in a bid to quell British troops' rising anger at the revelation that 19 British soldiers face allegations of murder and brutality in Iraq. Senior officers believe the unprecedented number of investigations into troops' behavior is creating a fear of prosecution among soldiers that undermines the Army's effectiveness. Those would be, ladies and gentlemen, British bad apples. Just a few of them. Apparently, some of the stations on the network preempted their normal broadcast of the president's weekend radio address. I don't understand public radio stations preempting normal programming, but we've decided to step in and help out. So we're going to preempt a few moments of our time now, ladies and gentlemen, to bring you, by recording, the president's weekly radio address.
My fellow Americans, this has been a solemn and a somber weekend. From Washington to Pennsylvania to lower Manhattan to the outskirts of Baghdad, we have observed the third anniversary of the horrific attacks upon our homeland while Saddam Hussein sits in a prison cell. It's a weekend when we have rededicated ourselves to find and bring to justice the perpetrators of that evil outrage, as well as the dead-ender Iraqis bent on preventing their country from having a peaceful, democratic future, much like New York City itself, except with a smaller Jewish population. But this is a time not only to mourn and grieve and remember loss and feel its pain again, along with the Iraqi people. This is a time for rebuilding and for standing tall and for saying to the terrorists, you may have hit America, but we will be back, and so will Iraq. This is a time for plans for new Ground Zero and a new Kirkuk. This is a time when parents tell their children, your father was a New York City fireman and he was a hero, or your father was a member of the new interim Iraqi government until evildoers blew up his Hummer. As we close our mouths for a moment of silence, let us remember the New Yorkers who, doing their jobs, gave their lives for our freedom. But let us also remember the Iraqis who visited me in the Oval Office, proudly showing off their prosthetic arms to replace the ones Saddam Hussein cut off. Prosthetic arms that may even have been made in New York or Washington or rural Pennsylvania. On this third anniversary of the momentary triumph of evil in this country, while Iraqis sat helpless to help us, let's honor the service of all who have served for 4 months or for almost an entire 6 years. And let's never stoop, for reasons of Washington-style politics, to leaving the impression that Saddam Hussein was in any way connected with the events of 9/11. But neither let's ignore the fact that as New Yorkers stand proud and resilient this weekend, not waiting for handouts from Washington, so too with the actual delivery of our promised aid to the people of Baghdad. Truly, there is a bond forged in freedom and tempered with sacrifice between the city that never sleeps and the city that can't. Thanks for listening.
You cats keep beating up your chops. I ought to turn you over to the cops. But dig this spiel, I'm gonna lay on your gate. Don't cop your broom, park the body and wait. You run your mouth and I run my business, brother. You run your mouth and I run my business, brother. You tell everybody I'm busted. You talk so much you got me disgusted. But you run your mouth and I run my business, brother. You run your mouth and I run my business, brother. You run your mouth and I run my business, brother. You start in telling me you're my pal and end up telling me how to handle my gal. You run your mouth and I run my business, brother. You run your juicy mouth and I run my business, brother. Just run your juicy mouth and I run my business, brother. You always telling me what to do, saying I wouldn't do that if I was you. You run your mouth and I run my business, brother. Just clap your liver lips and I run my business, brother. Clap your liver lips and I run my business, brother. If I'd followed your advice on how to make dough, I'd been in the jailhouse long ago. You run your mouth and I run my business, brother.
I dig you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Not you would say a bumper crop. Maybe the pick of the week is mine. You know, that's the irony. For doing a show 1 minute too long last week. Were you here at the beginning of the program when I apologized for that? You're welcome. This is from Sterling Heights, which I guess is near Detroit. A man who was indicted on charges of smuggling Middle Eastern immigrants into the United States received an apology from the government last week as all charges against him were dropped. Since his arrest Wednesday, Basil Denna, his son, and his lawyer have said the feds had the wrong man. They were proven right. The charges were dropped, and a U.S. attorney from Washington, D.C. apologized. They always knew they had the wrong guy, Denna told a television news organization. They just didn't believe it until they looked at the tape. He was one of five people indicted by a federal grand jury on charges of operating an illegal smuggling ring before the charges were dropped. All five were accused of charging illegal immigrants from Middle Eastern countries thousands of dollars to be smuggled into the U.S. Thursday, in federal court, a government undercover officer reviewed a surveillance video and confirmed the man in that video is not Basil Denna. Let's go to the videotape. The independent U.S. movie Hollywood Buddha has stirred controversy among Buddhists in Thailand. Here we go again. Will we never learn? For its poster showing producer and star Philippe Caland sitting atop a large Buddha image, his feet dangling in the Buddha's eyes. The public outcry began when the Thai daily newspaper Matichong published an article entitled Buddhism Humiliated on its front page. The Thai Buddhist Monks Council filed a complaint about the poster. Thais regard the head as the most sacred part of the body, which should not be touched, particularly by the feet, which are considered the most base body part. guess guys haven't turned around and looked in the mirror lately. The story of Hollywood Buddha, it revolves around a financially struggling Hollywood film producer thinking he will be saved by praying to and kissing a Buddha image on the forehead. He rents out the image for $2,000 a month. The film is due to open in Los Angeles on September 24th. The writer and producer of the film has apologized for offending Buddhists. Galland has promised the controversial posters will be removed, but said he cannot prevent the film from being released or change its contents. From The Economist, very well-known weekly magazine, in the August 14th to 20th, 2004 edition of The Economist, we published an article entitled Temasek, First Singapore, Then the World. We recognize the article was understood to mean that Mr. Lee Hsien Loong had appointed or was instrumental in appointing his wife to Temasek Holdings, not on merit, but for corrupt nepotist motives for the advancement of the Lee family's interests. We admit and acknowledge these allegations are false and complete without foundation. We unreservedly apologize to Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong and Minister Mentor Lee Kuan Yew for the distress and embarrassment caused them by these allegations. I believe that was done to avoid a caning. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, I told you it was thin gruel. But it was apologetic. Now to the Kerry campaign. There have been stories all week about unrest, shakeups, new people added to the Kerry campaign, and phone calls from the newly recovering Bill Clinton to the Kerry campaign as Senator Kerry comes out with new directions in his campaign, trying to erase the post-convention bounce enjoyed by George W. Bush. It sounds something like this.
Stories never before told of a life bigger and bolder than the one that inspired it. These are Profiles in Carriage.
All right, look, first thing is that we don't pay attention to polls. We agree on that?
Yeah, of course. You can't say anything else.
All right, second thing, the polls are looking really bad.
Well,
yes.
Yeah.
Shrummy? Well, yes, but only if you look at the internals.
Isn't this how you lost 8 of the last 7 presidential elections, Bob, by refusing to look at the dark side until it's too late?
Hey, I'm wearing a $2,000 suit and making my spritzers with Grand Cru Chablis. I must be doing something right.
Well, hey, CNN says the CBS documents are forged.
Okay, but hey, who switched the channel?
Oh, look, forget CNN. It's yesterday's news channel. I say that even though I'm involved with it. But, you know, if we're going to get back on this thing, we have to watch what the people are watching, MSNBC.
Oh, look, if we're not watching Fox, we're not seeing where the next shot is coming from.
Well,
I mean,
that's fine if you want to play defense. That's what's wrong with this campaign. Too much D, not enough O. Man, it sure felt all during August like there wasn't enough D either.
Well,
didn't it look insufficiently robust for me not to be out there defending my own military record? What, do you think we're not talking enough about Vietnam? Fine, we'll get Vice President Key out on the stump with you. Isn't he the one who runs a liquor store in California?
He's been dead for 5 years.
All right, we'll get his kid. Speaking of the stump, what happened to my band of brothers? Where's Jim Rossman been? He could help with all this.
He went home. He said after a month of the Swift Boat ads, he had to check his records, make sure you really did save his life.
Oh. Look, we've got like 50 days left to hammer away at the only issue that matters. And what is that? The people versus the powerful.
A real leader for a stronger America.
I don't know. I just got here. I'll think of something. But look, maybe I'm too dumb and ugly to know better. But isn't Vietnam a metaphor for Iraq? Isn't that what we're doing, is having a debate on Iraq in disguise? You know, biography is metaphor.
Somebody changed the channel again.
Well, tell me she wanted it on Fox.
You know, I'm beginning to wonder if having these meetings 3 times a day is really helping all that much?
No, look, I'm serious. See, America needs a strong leader. You were strong in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. America has gotten suckered into a stupid war. You came back and said Vietnam was a stupid war. So
if he hadn't said, knowing what he knows now, he'd still vote for the Iraq War, we'd be in great shape.
Mary Beth, that's not what I said. I said something much more carefully nuanced.
Man, if you ask me at this rate, you're nuancing your ass right back to the Senate.
Whoever changed that channel is fired.
Let me just assume command here just for a minute. It seems to me that in the last 60 days of this campaign, our job is to project me as authentically as possible, because compared to our opponent, I am still quite plausibly authentic.
But he comes across more authentic. You can't fight that.
Oh, sure you can. You say my opponent's about as authentic as 50 cent shrimp, and here's why. Bang, 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 you drive his like ability numbers down half a point a day for 2 months, and you parking in the White House garage without a permit.
James, you're flip-flopping. You just had him back in the Senate.
Yeah, well. Oh, crap. The LSU game's on ESPN4.
James, how the hell are we supposed to strategize the toughest, most aggressive battle of my adult life with football on the tube?
All right, guess what? I'll mute the sucker. Mm-hmm. There, no distracting aggression.
That's not what I... Candidate Sweet, candidate speaking.
Hey, man, I'm just out of the hospital, and I got enough new blood flow to be dangerous to interns again.
Hold on, Mr. President. I'm going to go somewhere quiet. Okay, now I can hear you.
Bathroom?
Yes, sir. The suite's full of consultants.
Yeah, sounds like a presidential campaign, all right. Now listen, bud. Remember my 9-2 campaign when I kept saying we were gonna focus like a laser beam on the economy?
Oh, of course. Great campaign. Without Ross Perot in the race, you probably would have won a majority. It was...
You know what the key was to that campaign?
Oh, well, the economy, stupid. And please don't misconstrue me here, Mr. President. I'm not calling you stupid, but I'm...
Nope. Focusing like a laser beam. That's what you're not doing, John. You're like one of those searchlights at a Hollywood premiere.
Uh-huh.
You know, flashing a big wide light all over the sky.
Uh-huh.
Focus like a laser beam on what your campaign's really about, man. Which is what?
Well, which is that by character and background, by intellect and experience, I'm far more prepared to lead this country to a stronger and better future with a stronger economy and a smarter war on terror.
75 million people could say that. Why you now? Work on that. You still got time, kinda.
Mr. President, I've got a suite full of people in there, all very smart people, and I'm afraid they're strategizing me straight down the porcelain rabbit hole. Isn't my job to come across as authentically as possible?
John, what'd you do during August?
Well, not enough D.
No, I mean, when you were on vacation.
Mm.
You went sailing, for God's sake.
Well,
you went windsurfing.
Windsurfing, yes.
Remember when I was having trouble with Newt Gingrich? We spent weeks listening to focus groups about where real people go for a family vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of the vineyard, we ended up going someplace out west, you know. I mean, you want to come across authentic?
Yeah.
You got to work at it, bud. It doesn't just happen. You ever go bowling?
Not since I was 17. Mm. I was good, though. I have long arms and...
Well,
the food's here.
Mr. President, can we continue this? Room service is here.
Oh, sure. Don't want you eating in the bathroom, man. I'll be up. I'm like that guy in the new Viagra commercial. The guy they called Wild Thing is back.
That's great, sir. Glad to hear it.
Yeah, it's not Bob Dole's Viagra anymore, is it?
No, sir. It sure isn't.
Even though he's looking straight at you, these are Profiles in Carriage. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is going to put the twist-off cap back on this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via WBCQ, the planet, the shortwave giant, 7.415 megahertz. Around the world via your computer at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, kcrw.com and harryshearer.com. And now available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow. And it would be just like Colin Powell having to answer to his son, FCC Chairman Michael, about the F word, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld, that is to say, interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. The show playlists almost always available at harryshearer.com. And Le Show sends this week's virtual lozenge to Dan Rather. That's a new copyrighted feature, the virtual lozenge. We'll see how long that lasts. Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.